your sporting news, reviews and previews. This is the Sports Desk.
Welcome, welcome back to the Sports Desk on what is another lovely Melbourne evening. We're here to drive you home wherever you're listening around the country. My name is Ethan Rigg, I'm your host, and I'm joined in a pretty depleted looking studio today by Liam Cole and Jack Hoggett. How are we doing, lads?
I'm doing good, but I'm a little confused. It feels like the tables have been flipped here.
Yeah.
We've got Liam as a guest.
No, we're still very strong tonight, that's for sure. But yeah, it is very weird on the other side, isn't it, Ethan?
It feels really strange to have the roles flipped, I'm not going to lie.
It does. Usually, I've been dropped, haven't I?
He's gone to reserves.
No, I'll still be hosting Fridays, which is obviously the best show in the business.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, you've got some news for us, Liam, to kick
us
off.
Let's go to the AFL first, and in particular the MRO. So Harley Reid and Sam Darcy, two superstars of the competition, have been banned for 2 weeks. So, Jack, they will basically rule them out for the Rising Star contention, and I think it's fair. So Harley Reid was banned for a tackle on Darcy Wilson against the Saints. I think that's fair. And Sam Darcy was late in a marking contest against Braden Maynard. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think the incidents are completely fair. The suspensions are there. I'm kind of glad that the AFL is actually targeting the actual action that a player has taken rather than the outcome of whether they've been concussed or hurt. So I think this is being a positive from the AFL.
Do you think the fairness element of the Rising Star should rule them out? Because it's not their ability,
is it? Yeah, exactly. I don't see it as a best and fairest, a Brownlow medal. Yeah, that's completely fine to be rubbed out because of a suspension. But it's the best young talent. And as a young player, you've got to make mistakes. You're learning.
Exactly.
So I see it as really unfortunate.
I didn't know it was a rule, to be honest.
Neither did I. I just assumed it was best talent.
I think Brownlow, yes, but yeah, it's a shame.
I also didn't know that was a rule, that being banned rubs you out of the Rising Star. Mm. And like you said, Jack, these young guys, they're going to make mistakes, especially when it's their first season in the league, in Harley Reid's case especially. And I understand where the AFL's coming from. You want to lay down a law that further down the line in your career, this will hurt you. If you get suspended, you won't be in contention to win the Brownlow. So regardless of whether you're the best player in the league or not that season, it won't matter. But I agree with you that they're going to make mistakes, and we shouldn't punish them based on the fact that they might get banned once in the season. It could be, in some cases, a soft ban. In others, it could be completely deserved, like the cases we've seen. But it does highlight the fact that it's a brutal sport in terms of you make mistakes, you get punished for them. And I think that, especially when it comes to the Rising Star, with all the guys who've got so much talent this year, there needs to be a bit more leeway, Liam.
I think there has to be, but got more AFL news, Ethan, and Sam Taylor, GWS defender, has re-signed for a further 7 years at the club, which is huge news for
a
team in recent years that have struggled to keep their A-grade talent. We speak of Jeremy Cameron from the Cats. They really would love him back, but that's a great signing, isn't it, Jack?
Well, absolutely. To be able to get a defender that is probably the best in the comp right now in his position and lock him down for such a long time, it lets you build off that. And honestly, I can see GWS up in finals for a few years to come.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of long-term contracts, but for a guy like Sam Taylor, I think there can be exceptions, Ethan.
I definitely think so. I think he's a massive piece for what GWS want to do. And like you said, Jack, I mean, this year, they look like they're in a strong position to play finals footy. They started the season strongly. They've fallen off a little bit, but that core of players is not just strong at the moment, but it's incredibly good for the future. And it's good to see that the Giants are letting their intent known for not just how they want to go about their business with their younger players, but also what kind of club they want to be perceived as. They want to be perceived as a destination club where all of your talented young assets or players don't leave. It happens a lot in other sports where there are some clubs that are kind of viewed as feeder clubs, the bigger sides, but I like that GWS are taking a stand, and they're also putting their foot down and being like, we're not going to let all of these guys go, where that might not have been the way in the past, Liam.
Well, they've got a great culture under Adam Kingsley, unlike the other expansion team. That's all what I'll say.
Just firing a few shots right out there. Anyway, Jack, you've got some motorsport news.
Yeah, I do. So I'm going to take you to the Nordschleife in Germany. As the Nürburgring 24 Hours just finalised, but it's hard to say that it even begun. Less than a third of the way through, it was cancelled, essentially. Only 7 hours and 22 minutes of racing occurred after heavy fog descended upon the track before midnight on Saturday, with the race to restart on Sunday morning. But the race never really happened because after 5 laps under safety car, they called it quits as it was just too dangerous to race in such awful conditions. So eventually this just handed the win to Shiro Motorsports' number 16 Audi, driven by Frank Stippler, Christopher Mies, Ricardo Feller and Dennis Marchal. It's Audi's 7th win at the track and is a nice send-off for them because this is the last time Audi is in GT racing.
Yeah, they head into Formula One next season.
Allegedly.
Allegedly heading into Formula One next season. And it's good to see them have some success. But the one thing that really comes to me about that is that if you're not able to complete the full 24 hours, you have to pause the race and the restart then doesn't reach the heights that you want it to. I feel like you should void the race in that way. You're not able to give everybody a fair and a real go at having a shot at the win. And I think it kind of takes away and adds a lot of controversy to motorsport where there doesn't need to be. I agree the driver's safety 100% comes first. And the decision to stop it the night before during the heavy fog was the right idea. But if you can't restart it properly the day after, I feel like you should concede and be like, okay, we can't get the full 24-hour race in. So if you can't get to a minimum of, I would say, 18, where would you go from there, Jack?
Yeah, I think you definitely have a point there. It feels like, well, it's not even a third of the way through the race.
Yeah.
And a few teams did try and lodge an appeal for the race to be changed or cancelled because of that. However, the organisers just shut that down. It does, however, mean that YouTuber Jimmy Broadbent, a racing sim racing YouTuber, was actually able to get second, a podium finish in his class, which is a bit of a funny story out of it. I don't think he was particularly pleased with how the race went, but it was a good result for him nonetheless.
That is amazing.
Yeah, so it shows that, you know, there's something in sim racing. You can actually get to real-life podium finishes.
Oh, my goodness. That is absolutely incredible. And the last bit of news we've got comes from Turkey, of all places, and it is that Jose Mourinho has joined Fenerbahce as their manager. The special one, probably, I would say, the king of Europe. He's won all three major European competitions. He comes to Fenerbahce after they've not won the Super League in a decade. They finished 3 points off of Galatasaray, bitter rivals Galatasaray this season for the league title. Is the special one on one last dance going to work his magic in Turkey, Liam?
Not sure. We've been everywhere this intro. Turkey, oh, geez.
We're going global.
I'm not sure. I think he was harshly sacked at Roma. I think at times his recruitment, you know, leaves a lot to be desired, Jack. I think in a league like that, I think he's still got it.
Yeah, I feel like he can take what was essentially the second best club, actually really unlucky not to win the Super League. Due to Galatasaray's just mercurial amazing run. But yeah, I think if he could take this team to Europe, that would be really something. Under the new European system, it might be a bit different. It's a bit harder for lower league ranked teams to win these matches, but I reckon he can do it, to be honest.
I definitely think they're looking at a Conference League trophy under Mourinho, probably potentially a Europa League one as well. And like you said, Jack, I think that Fenerbahce found themselves in an unfortunate situation this year where Galatasaray, who brought in Wilfried Zaha and I believe Dries Mertens as well over the summer to partner up with Mauro Icardi, they have a star-studded lineup in Turkey's top flight. Probably one of the strongest teams we've seen come out of Turkey. They didn't disgrace themselves in the Champions League this year. They were unlucky not to go through to the round of 16. And that followed up back at home. They won the league by 3 points. But the penultimate game of the season, Fenerbahce did beat Galatasaray in their own backyard. So, Jack, is there enough there with Fenerbahce, with the existing structure, for Mourinho to come in and do what Jose does?
No, absolutely. I think you're looking at a team that is primed to take on Galatasaray. As you say, you know, they've already got a win over them. Really, it was a game of inches last year. Like, it was like almost one loss for Galatasaray, something ridiculous like that. Stuff that, you know, one season wonder stuff. So I think this is Fenerbahce's.
Both Istanbul teams lost two games each last season, I think.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
It's ridiculous. It's Premier League stuff. It's Man City, Liverpool level stuff. And Liam, do you reckon Jose can take them, maybe not to a European crown straight away, but to at least the top of Turkey again?
Well, I think he's still got that aura about him, and that will probably attract players. So that's a good start. Galatasaray, as you named, some of their players are really outstanding. So it's going to be a good challenge.
Definitely. That's a great start from all of us here on the Sports Chest.
Sure is, mate.
Don't go anywhere. When we come back after this break, we'll be talking some footy. That's next. On the Sports Desk. And guys, it's time to talk some footy. And we go back to Friday night to kick us off with Collingwood and the Dogs. It ended up being a pretty comfortable win for the boys from the West in the end, Liam.
Yeah, credit to the Bulldogs. I've been quite harsh on them, I think, fair enough, the past month. But, you know, they were really good against the depleted Magpie side, you got to say. Plus 23 in inside 50s, plus 17 in clearances. But the injuries, Jack, they're mounting on Collingwood. I think Ash Johnson is a bit of a concern. He was all over the place, let's be honest, on Friday night. And without Mason Cox, their forward line structure, especially down the line, they really struggled with that.
Yeah, absolutely. No Brodie Miocek as well.
Exactly. Elliot, yep.
I think there was a good game from Lachie Schultz, though. He kind of stepped up. It's probably what Collingwood fans have been looking for a while. However, the Doggies were also pretty injured as well. No Libba, no Norton.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd say they're more structurally important. Well, not, maybe not entirely, but there was a few others there as well. Ed Richards. So it's hard to say, oh, Collingwood just lost because of injuries. I think that the Doggies really went hard in that last fourth quarter and just prevented Collingwood from doing whatever they wanted. Took away their ball movement completely. Liam Jones was huge. And the Bont. How good is the Bont?
Two goals, 38 disposals. When you need your skipper to step up, he did exactly that in the last quarter.
Oh, he's just so good. he's definitely the player that is the most unlucky to never have won a Brownlow, and probably the most deserving to have won a Brownlow in the last 5 years.
Yeah, it's fair.
I think definitely Bontempelli led by example, and the Dogs have really missed that presence a lot this season, guys. I think with Collingwood as well, like you said, Jack, they just got overrun in the last quarter. The Western Bulldogs did a really good job at shutting their game down. And for a side who are so hot and cold, I feel like we have this conversation every single week. But I'll start with you, Liam, and you as well, Jack. Are the Doggies a real look-in now? Does the fact that they finally picked up a really good bit of form, they've stopped being so inconsistent every other week, are they finally starting to show signs that they can give September a real go?
It's a good question. I think they can win the premiership if they keep playing like this. I mean,
what?
Yeah. Win the premiership?
I think they can. I think historically they do surge late. Even in 2021, it was a late surge. They start seasons pretty slow under Luke Beveridge. They've got the talent on paper. They've got the midfield when they get Libba and stuff back. And they've got the big tools. If they're, you know, 15 to 22 on their list can step up, bit like what Carlton had last year, I think they can.
That is a massive
call.
That's
a huge call.
I think they can.
There are no chickens present in the studio.
Don't need
tonight. Oh, that would have been borderline. Jack,
that would have been a chicken.
What do you reckon of their prospects?
Well, no one in 2016 saw the Doggies doing it.
Exactly.
And they came from very the lowest ever down. 2021, they came from fifth as well.
Not
so
top four, yeah.
And they've never really been a top four side. And somehow they keep on managing to get into grand finals, even winning them. So I guess maybe it is a bit of the Doggies' DNA.
There you go.
However, I'm not convinced. I still see them as having a lot of passages. I think they've got a lot of small forwards that do nothing and a lot of halfbacks at times that can just go missing.
And Tim English needs to step up.
Absolutely.
Against the big boys. I think when he's played against guys like Max Scorn, he's really been found wanting.
I'm very with Jack on this one. I think it's a step too far to say that they're in the premiership window. We talk about how talented this group of players is, and they do start slow, surge late. But I think there's too much quality up at the top end of the league this season for them to go all the way. I could see them I could see them being in September. But
okay.
I reckon maybe the prelims are best. I think anything else is a step too far. But over in the West, it is coming together, and it's also coming together for the Hawks as well as we move to Saturday's early game. Another very convincing win for Hawthorn over the Crows. I'm just going to say...
You're pumped up.
Yeah, I'm going to say my piece on this one. They never gave Adelaide a look in, to be honest. They were in complete control of that game. It's been a real contrast the last couple of weeks post-Port to see how well Hawthorn have managed the game in the later stages, especially that last quarter on Saturday when the Crows got the jump on them early, kicked a couple of goals. And the vibe at the MCG was, oh, here we go again. There could be another collapse on the cards, but Hawthorn stood up and were counted for. In particular, I thought Dylan Moore was brilliant. Kick five really led the line well for Hawthorn. And they're another team who are just slowly starting to creep their way into some kind of conversation about finals football.
Out of nowhere, really?
Out of nowhere, I think so, definitely. A good run of form recently has seen the Hawks really be pushed into that conversation. Are they a chance, Liam?
To make the eight? I think they are. I mean, they should have beat Port Adelaide. Let's be honest, Jack. I know you're a little bit surprised, but I think their contested ball game is up to scratch. I think Newcomb, he stepped up. You got Will Day back in the team, and I think a plus 23 in inside 50s. I think they can.
I think they have one of the most exciting small forwards compositions in the comp. Dylan Moore, 5 goals and 20-odd disposals on the weekend. Jack Ginnivan, I mean, he's a bit of an unlikable figure at times. but he is exciting to watch. And I think they're an awesome pair. They get the celebrations up there as well. I don't think Mavio Chol's a key forward that's going to be there in a premiership-winning side, but he can at least help them along as a second up.
He is frustrating, I feel, Chol. But what about the Crows? I mean, they just did not turn up. They've had a really poor season. At their best, they're very good, but the difference between their best and worst is quite stark. And I am worried about their 15 to 22. Guys like Chase Jones, Schoenberg, Cook, are they AFL standard? I don't think so at the moment. And if their top five players aren't stepping up like Walker, Rankin, Dawson, they are quite a poor team.
Yeah, I agree. And it's extra disappointing for the Crows that they just lost Matt Crouch as well, one of their experienced good players. All credit to him, though. Played with a shoulder injury. He's now out for the season, but he still played on and got 35 disposals. Really ashamed that the rest of the team couldn't lift for him.
And Taylor Walker might have a back issue, was subbed out of the game. So there's another star player potentially out for a long time.
Yeah, a lot of problems for the Crows at the moment. Very injury hit with their two of their more key players. Just to touch on what you said, Liam, I think where they are at the moment, their best is comfortably up there with the best in the league, but their worst, and even when they're just kind of average, I didn't think they were horrendous on Saturday. They didn't really turn up, but they
were poor.
They were poor. But I reckon they were about maybe a 5 out of 10.
I think Matthew Nix, the coach, said after the game that was probably their poorest performance this year. So they've had a few, so that's saying something.
It definitely is. And Adelaide have got problems. Another team who have had a pretty poor few weeks, but have got something to smile about, as Liam also gets a smile out in the studio, is the Saints. They snap a pretty wretched run of form, beating the Eagles. Liam, talk us through it.
We're back.
We are so back.
No, we're not back, but it was pleasing to get some 4 points. We've lost 3 games this year within 5 points. So if we won those ones, we're 6-7 wins. We're still in a fight for the top eight. Hasn't been our year, but Callum Wilkie, Jack Sinclair, they stepped up. Wilkie had 13 intercept possessions, played a really good game. Jack Sinclair, his ball use inside 50 was the real key for me.
You notice how much the mood changes after one win, don't you, Jack? All of a sudden, it's gone from we're a bottom four side to if we just edge the close ones, we're in the eight. Where are St Kilda really at? Where's a good representation of the Saints right now?
Maybe slightly above where they are now. Maybe one or two spots above where they are right now.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, not good. I feel they've gone backwards a fair bit from last year. However, a few of their more senior players did step up this game. I think we just saw the Mason Wood legacy game. 4 goals, 22 disposals. A great showing to help lift.
Yeah, he got injured in the second game, dislocated his collarbone, so he was out for about a month and a half. But he's an elite runner. He can play forward, help out in the back line and on the wing. So he's quite important there. And what about the tag of Harley Reid? So he was on fire at halftime, 17 disposals, 6 tackles. A guy called Marcus Winhager put the clamps on him after the halftime, I should say, and 3 disposals.
I mean, it was a really effective tag. You can't deny that. Completely nullified Harley out of the game. But, I mean, at least for Harley, you can say he's good enough to get tagged now.
He is. He didn't like it. He gave away about 3 or 4 free kicks. Some were there, some were not. And obviously that tackle that got him in trouble. So he's going to have to expect that every time he plays now. And I'm a little bit surprised other teams haven't done that too.
Bit of a learning curve for him, I reckon, this weekend against St Kilda. He got tagged very effectively. And like you said, it looked like he lost his head a little bit. With him being so young, it's his first season in the league, and he's already taking on a big responsibility to kind of lead this West Coast midfield. Does there need to be, I know he's a new lad, does there need to be more maturity shown there, Jack?
Yeah, I think, as you said, this was a really good learning opportunity. He's so young, so few games into his career, that to have a roadblock right now in a close loss is probably the best type of learning experience you'll ever get.
I definitely agree with you. I think make the mistake early on, learn from it, and he's only going to go from strength to strength and get so much better once he figures out how to get around those tags. But all in all, a positive win for St Kilda, a big win over in the West with how good West Coast are at home. And another side who finished very strongly were your Cats, Jack. Came back from a bit of a shaky start to rally and finish strong against the Tigers.
I'm so full of the copium as well as Liam. We are so back. Yeah, not the prettiest game by any stretch, but you could really feel that this Cats team was kind of defeated going into this match. There was a real lack of energy, and Richmond walked over them. All credit to them. They played really well in that first half. Their pressure was outstanding. Yep. Really forced so many un-Geelong-like errors out of this Cats team. But all credit to the Cats as well. They just came back after the second half and dominated Richmond. Kept them to 3 goals, 1 behind for the rest of the match while they scored 10 goals, 6. It was all the Geelong ball movement that we haven't seen for the last 4 weeks. It came alive and it rinsed Richmond, and also their pressure came back as well.
It was definitely a much stronger second half showing from Geelong. And I thought that first half was very encouraging for Richmond. They've had some very dark weeks recently, and there's been a lot of soul searching going on there. Liam, is that first half anything to really go off of from Tigers fans? Is it a sign that
it's positive? I think playing in Geelong is probably the toughest road trip there can be. Maybe not this year, but in past years. And there's another injury for Richmond, Mikelty Lefau, the New Zealander, who had a great game, let's be honest.
Yeah,
he's done an ACL, which is horrible news. I think that's the third this year for the Tigers, so it just keeps on getting worse. What about Dusty? Obviously, 299 games, had a great fortnight. Will he be rested next week?
Just do it. That's my take. Like, let him play in front of his fans on the 300th. Like, they're not going to win, so Just let him.
Yeah, but when you've got about 25, 26 players available selection, it's a little strange for me. I think, how good would it be if he won the game away at the Adelaide Oval in his 300th game?
No, I disagree, because this game against Geelong, they rested their main midfielder, Dion Prestia. I don't get it. Like, they just lost Shai Bolton as well.
He's injury prone.
I know,
Prestia.
But so is Dusty now. He's so old.
Not as bad.
Not as bad, but just let them have this one hurrah at the MCG.
Okay.
I'm a Jack on this one. For someone who's given so much to Richmond and brought those fans so much joy, for such a milestone, they deserve to see him at home. They shouldn't have to travel. There should be a packed house to see Dusty in game number 300 in Melbourne. Speaking of Melbourne, it was a horror show for the D's on Sunday. They got battered, to put it very bluntly, by the Dockers. A real disaster for Melbourne. And you could say for Fremantle, maybe exercising some demons, Liam?
I've been a harsh critic of Fremantle as well. I don't really like the way they play, but credit to them, they stick with it. And Jordan Clark had 15 marks. Luke Ryan had 18. They like to control the ball out of their back half. And, you know, Melbourne didn't turn up in all facets of the game. The Dockers were 31 plus in inside 50s, plus 25 in clearances for the whole game. And Melbourne's strength is their contested ball. So there's not many excuses for Melbourne.
No, not at all. It's scary for both teams. Scary that Freo have just become so good that they can actually finally score 140 now, when a couple of weeks ago we didn't think they could make it past 60. And now scary for the Demons that they can't even make 60. What has gone wrong with the Demons? Like, Petrarca had an awesome game a couple of weeks ago where he's kicked four, and now he's just been nullified. Clayton Oliver's come back and he hasn't done much at all as well.
No, he's not the same, and there has to be question marks about his fitness as well. I don't want to say the three-letter word, but...
we're not allowed to talk about Wade anymore.
No, we're not. So I think there has to be question marks. I think there has been around their culture, especially at the start of their year. You know, does there need to be questions around it again?
I think there are problems, definitely, at Melbourne right now. This is a team which I think are still in the premiership window if they get it right. And it doesn't look like it's going that way for them this season. They should be in and around the top four, but that performance at the weekend, they can't just chalk it off as a one-off, because it will start a rot. It's happened so many times this season throughout the league. It's so easy to see. And it makes next Monday against Collingwood on the King's birthday an absolutely massive game, doesn't it, Liam?
Absolutely. Can't wait for that. And we've also got the Blues and Bombers on Sunday night.
Two big, big games, and the Bombers are also going to need to rebound from a bit of a horror show as they were defeated on the Gold Coast by the Suns. 11-point win for the Gold Coast, who continue to be hot at home. A good run of form from Essendon comes to an end. Jack, is this going to be the start of the question marks for the Bombers?
Well, it was the battle of the frauds, I guess we've kind of said. Which one will fraud first? And it's hard to say that, you know, Essendon is playing away, but ultimately they could have won this game like very easily. Mm-hmm. There's so many more shots. You can talk about as many free kick decisions as you want. Obviously there was controversy about it, but remember, look, that Nick Martin goal, well, point, sorry, where he smashed the post in front. They get that.
That's a meme, isn't it?
Yeah, they're one step closer to a win there.
I do like the Gold Coast Suns small forwards. I think Ben Long had a great game. He's had a good month, in fact. He kicked four goals, 13 disposals last night, and they've also got Tom Berry over from Brisbane and Ben Ainsworth, who's a really good runner. So I like their forward line at the moment.
I think the Suns are definitely piecing something really good together. Obviously, that win puts them in the eight, which is massive for them. And the only thing that's really a takeaway, is this going to continue? Could we see Gold Coast in the finals this year, Liam?
They're in the eight, so that's a good start. They historically aren't great at the back end of seasons with their youth. They've got a big test against the Saints at Marvel Stadium Saturday night. Obviously, the Saints haven't had the best of years, but if they're fair dinkum, Gold Coast, they smash them by 10 goals, Jack.
Yeah, I reckon so. Well, maybe not that much, but if they actually want to make finals, they have to start winning games away, which they haven't all year. And the Saints do provide, unfortunately, a soft target for them to take.
I definitely think if they're going to end those away day blues, it will be next week against St Kilda. But don't go anywhere on the sports desk. When we come back after this short break, we'll be going into the Champions League final and the NBA finals as well. That's next. The final. It was all eyes on Wembley, where Borussia Dortmund and Real Madrid clashed in what was an absolute belter of a European final, a real game of two halves. Obviously, farewells for two club legends, Marco Reus at BVB and Toni Kroos at Real Madrid, the two Germans going head to head. And it was Los Blancos who came out on top, claiming their 15th European crown. 15, guys, that's ridiculous. Goals from Dani Carvajal and then Vinicius Jr. sealed the deal for Carlo Ancelotti's side. It was an absolutely brilliant defensive performance from Real Madrid's Thibaut Courtois, who was recalled into the side before the game. That was a bit controversial, Jack, but it seemed that Ancelotti's choice was vindicated.
Absolutely. Well, it was really looking like it was going to be, you know, Dortmund's to take at the start. So many missed chances. For me, it all kind of sunk in my heart that Real was going to win when I saw that Fulkrog miss, when he hit the post and it bounced out instead of in. Really unfortunate moment. A game of a literal centimetre to the left and it would have gone in. It's just the Dortmund curse in a way, isn't it?
It really does feel that way. It feels like not just Dortmund, but in this era with Marco Reus as well, whenever they get to a big final, it just never, ever, ever seems to go for them, Justin.
Yeah, and it's such a terrible way to see out Marco Reus, and he's done so much for the club, hasn't won that much in the terms of trophies, but, and also I thought it was a bit painful to see Hummels as well, and he's been left out of the German squad, maybe controversially because he's had a brilliant season, but it was just really sad to see. I was rooting for them. Real, they're going to be favourites to win it again next year potentially, and yeah, I thought Dortmund played really well in that first half, but they just couldn't capitalise, and in the end it cost them against a good team.
Oh, definitely. Brilliant first half from Dortmund. And speaking of Hummels, played that ball through to Adeyemi, split Real Madrid in half, went round Courtois, and I was thinking, this is it, this is 1-0, Dortmund will lead the final. His touches just let him down, and it seems to be a theme with him. I'm not going to put him on fraud watch or anything like that, but it was just really highlighted to me in the final that when it comes to the crucial moment, Jack, he just doesn't seem to have the composure for Dortmund.
Yeah, there's a difference between a B-plus player, an A-plus player, and an S-tier, like a king, right? It's just that ability to finish under the most high-pressure situations. And he's a good club servant, and he'll be at good clubs, but he's not going to be an absolutely elite striker or winger.
I don't know if he won't be an elite striker or winger. I think there's still so much untapped potential there with him. He is so young. It's his second season in Germany, and he was a big part of Dortmund getting to the Champions League final. I think he still has another level to go to that he hasn't shown us yet. But at the same time, I agree with you in the way that I can never really see him playing for like a Real Madrid or a Barcelona, even really a Bayern Munich as well. It's not that Dortmund is his level. I think he can go one step above, but he needs to work on those big moments because they probably won't get another look in at this for, I would think, at least the next decade after what Fabrizio Romano told us yesterday, that Kylian Mbappe is off to Real Madrid, a transfer that's been 5-6 years in the making, basically since he arrived in the French capital. It's finally happening. Jack, what does this mean for football? Are we about to see a new Galacticos era at Real Madrid?
Football is dead. I say that as a Man City fan, but no. Yeah, it's rough, isn't it? That you can be the best club in the world and then still have the best player in the world even come to you for free, essentially. And what is probably the most stacked team that we're going to see since the second Galacticos era, which, mind you, wasn't actually all that successful for the amount of talent it had on the list. Missing out on finals and ending a decade-long span without a Champions League. So who knows? Maybe it doesn't turn out too bad for all of us.
I can't see a world where it doesn't turn out amazingly. Because Real Madrid have got such a strong team, such a strong core in place. And it's not just with the players. Carlo Ancelotti's already said he wants to retire at the club. I've got a good feeling he's going to be offered a new deal. It's just, Justin, not only for Real Madrid as well, but on the flip side, for PSG, obviously they had Neymar, Messi and Mbappe 2 years ago, and they've been on this real star-studded project for the last decade, really. Where does this leave them?
Yeah, they've spent a lot of money, and it's kind of hard to see. They also splashed out to get Dembele. And it's, again, it's hard because they're not attracting big names because of their lack of European success. Obviously, they've dominated the French league, but even traditionally, French teams haven't had success in Europe. And the only team I think that's won a Champions League is Marseille. Yeah, and that's just not going to attract big names when you're these youngsters. They want to go to clubs that are building that foundation of success in the later years, but PSG doesn't really have that.
I also think as well, the thing that doesn't help PSG is the fact that they have such a monopoly on Ligue 1 now. And even with that, they've still managed to lose out on league titles to Lille, to Monaco, and even Montpellier, like about a decade ago. It's not a good sign. And it just seems to me that in Europe, especially when it comes to the big names, they're not perceived as a winning club.
Yeah, I agree. And again, we talk about attracting big names. It's just going to be something to see over the next few years, what they can build and if they can get back to success in France and success in Europe. And quickly, just a quick yes or no answer for you, Ethan. Is Vinicius Jr. your pick for the Ballon d'Or this year?
No, Jude Bellingham.
Oh, I like it. I like it.
I'm going to go with Jude Bellingham. From one set of finals to another, let's talk some basketball, guys.
So the Dallas Mavericks cruised to a 103 win over the Timberwolves to finish their series 4-1. It was all thanks to a strong first half, but now the Mavericks will face Boston on Friday. Justin, run us through it.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this series. We have a lot of, I guess, previous relationships here. Kyrie Irving, we know how badly that ended in Boston. And it's interesting to see this. I actually wanted to bring back, I listened back to our tape from last week. I think Ethan really hit the nail on the head. He mentioned the fact that Boston would be rejoicing at the fact that they're seeing Dallas over Minnesota, and also that it feels like their title to lose. And again, that kind of feels even more prevalent in the state that they're in. That Dallas kind of seems like a weaker matchup, despite playing well post-trade deadline. Boston really seem like they're going to win this one. What do you think, Ethan?
I think Boston, it's still definitely theirs to lose. Dallas's run feels like Dirk's in 2011. It has that real, like, get it together at the end, a late surge to the finals feel to it. Whereas I think the Celtics have been way too consistent this season for Dallas. And I think that this is the big culmination of a 10-year plan, longer, for Boston, where it's they've built these pieces together with Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. They've got all of these guys into one side. And it feels like now's the time, Justin, doesn't it? It really has that feel to it.
Yeah, I absolutely love what Boston has built, especially through the draft. And Jack, you had something to say?
Yeah, I just wonder, though, with this big 10-year plan, the history of Boston in finals for what, nearly four decades, since almost the Larry Bird years, has been of choking under the best of conditions. Can they shake that?
Yeah, I've never seen one championship team milk a championship more than the 2008 Celtics. They have won championship in the past, I'm not sure exactly the year, but it's 30-something years. And I think, just quickly before we move on, I think Boston loves this matchup in terms of positions. They have so many good bodies to throw at Luka Doncic in terms of defending ability. And they may not have the size to compete with Dallas, but they have every single player on this roster that can shoot a three ball. And if they're on, there's no way Dallas can keep up offensively despite having Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. It's really, really, I think it's just Boston's to lose.
I definitely agree. 100% the Celtics title to lose. And I just can't see Dallas winning. I don't know about you two, but if we're going to go with predictions, I've got Boston. Justin?
Yeah, Boston. And probably about six games.
Jack?
I just can't ever say yes to Boston. It's just ingrained in me. I love that. So I'm going to, even I don't even like the Mavericks that much, so I'm just going to go the Mavericks in six as well.
Wow. Yeah, you know, like where's it. My chicken? I need it.
I know. They're not here tonight. Anyway, it is time to move on to this week's Minute Mondays.
And now the sports capital becomes the quiz capital. It's the Sports Desk Minute Mondays.
I think for the first time, I might be hosting a Minute Mondays. And because it was the Champions League final this weekend, we've got a Champions League themed Minute Mondays. Are we ready, guys?
Oh, yeah.
All right. In what year was the Champions League formed?
1965.
1951.
1955. Who is the all-time top scorer in the UCL?
Ronaldo.
Yes. And for a bonus point, how many goals?
61.
73.
140.
Oh, wow.
Who has won the Champions League the most amount of times?
Real Madrid.
Yes. Again, how many have they got now?
15.
Oh. And for the 2021 final, who scored the only goal of the game?
Oh, wow.
It was Kai Havertz. Who has the most UCL goals in a single season and how many?
Lionel Messi?
No, Cristiano Ronaldo with 17. And we talk about the winners, but we have to go to the other side of that. Obviously didn't happen for Dortmund at the weekend. But who in Europe's elite competition has been the runners-up the most amount of times?
Juventus?
It is Juventus,
Jack.
Oh,
I was going to say Bayern.
And since we started, we'll finish how many times?
Six.
Very close. It was seven. That was.
Have they won one?
They have.
Two. Oh, okay.
They have won two.
That was an absolutely brilliant Minute Mondays, and it rounds out an absolutely fantastic Monday show. We'll be back on Friday for more talk. Thank you for listening wherever you are around the country. We hope you have a good night. Take care and goodbye.